Welcome back, Mystery Maniacs, to another fun-filled, zany adventure of the Mystery Machine Diaries, a podcast dedicated to all things Scooby-Doo, specifically the TV series Scooby-Doo Mystery Incorporated from the 2010s. I am your host, Brad, your ghost host, and as always, and almost not today, my co-host, a pup named...
Chris.
Hey, Chris.
Hi.
How's it going?
Oh, you know, I made it.
He did.
He did.
We almost had to have our producer, Daniel, kick in as co-host for this episode, but Chris solved the mystery, his former mystery on time. And
solved the mystery of Los Angeles traffic.
Ah, you're the first.
Yeah, really. No, it's just, you know, long day at work, and then you know, if you don't leave wherever you're trying to leave on time in LA, it takes an extra hour plus to go anywhere. So
that includes crossing any given street.
Yeah, that includes walking. Absolutely.
Someone who was on time, as I mentioned, is producer Daniel.
What's up, Dad?
Oh, I don't even know what to say, but that's all wrong.
Blank stares all around.
It's
who was that?
Blink, blink.
What was it?
Never.
He's looking at me incredulously. But well, no, yes, I know who Bugs Bunny is, producer Daniel.
He's just trying to throw us off our game, Chris.
I'm thoroughly thrown off. Should we start again?
No.
We're gonna power through.
We're good at rebounding. And this episode has a lot of rebounding going on.
That's
so
true.
That's good. And you can find us all over the place. You can find us on the Facebooks. We're on the Facebooks, Chris.
Mystery Machine Diaries on Facebook, at Mystery Machine Diaries on Instagram.
Yeah.
At the Yard House at downtown Burbank. I like to hang out there.
Yeah.
You might find me there. And you can you can find the podcast itself on Spotify and Apple Podcasts and Anchor.fm. And you can find the show Mysteries Incorporated on Boomerang is how we're watching it, but you can also get DVDs. It's streaming on Spectrum, cable, satellite things.
Places.
Too. Yeah, you can find it. It's available. It's around.
Places.
Yeah.
Thanks for all that slew of information, Christopher.
Just got to get it out there.
It's true. And we are working on something special. Producer Daniel somehow thinks we'd be better off if we were seen as well as being heard. So we may be changing our format soon, at least
for
a test.
My mom always said I had a face for radio, so
no, your mom is the sweetest pie.
No,
your mom would never say that.
But we're gonna try seeing how it goes when you can see us.
Yeah.
On the YouTubes.
The camera adds 40 pounds, everybody, just in case you're wondering.
So do giant sandwiches and eating the Scooby diet. So
we need to have a giant.
Yeah, you know
we need to have a giant sandwich for our first.
Well, we're gonna have a whole plate full of snacks and Scooby items. I figure so.
So get ready to see us for at least one episode before I'm traumatized and we have to go back to the regular podcast format. Until then, we are hopping back in the Mystery Machine for another fun-filled episode, as I mentioned before, of the Mystery Machine Diaries. This time we are in 2010, October 4th, for the 10th episode, for those of you hopefully keeping track at home, and it is the episode Howl of the Fright Hound.
I like the name of this episode.
Why?
I don't know. Howl of the Fright Hound. It's got a really good ring to it.
It does. I agree.
I've never encountered a Fright Hound, but I'd like to. That sounds cool.
Some of the bars we've been to, I think we could beg to differ.
That might be fair, actually. But I don't know. It sounds like a super cool werewolf. Like, I imagine a werewolf in a leather jacket with sunglasses on a skateboard. Like, yeah, Fright Hound.
Or Sherlock Holmes, if you wanted to go Hound of the Baskervilles.
Oh, I suppose.
Yeah.
If you want to be all,
you don't hear the word
classical
hound
about it.
You don't hear the word hound too much. So it's nice to hear. I agree.
Not.
It's nice to hear.
Yeah.
It is the 10th episode. I'm excited because we saw over the weekend, we saw a movie in the cinemas. We still go to the theater.
We go pretty often.
We do. What did we see?
We saw the new Terminator movie, Terminator Dark Fate, which was it was pretty fun. I enjoyed it.
I did too. It was much better than people are giving it credit for.
Yeah. Well, I mean, so it's not going to win any Academy Awards or anything, but I do think it's the best Terminator movie since T2.
And it was also unknowingly good.
It was fun. It was really
because this episode is a direct homage to the Terminator.
Yeah, yeah, I didn't know that going into this, so that was really fun. So we had just seen the movie, and then I'm watching this movie, like, oh, wait, oh, I got it. Terminators all over the place.
All over
and
the
that
place.
Is all that the Terminator franchise is missing, is Terminator dogs.
Did you hear? Did you hear us, Universal or Paramount,
or like an
whoever
all,
does it these days?
An all puppy cast reboot of Terminator, maybe we get a German Shepherd as Arnold Schwarzenegger.
All right,
and
is this like that live action Lady and the Tramp thing that's on
Disney
Plus?
Oh, this would be so much better.
So if, the dogs would be hunting dogs.
Yeah. Robot like dogs Sarah, hunting regular dogs.
What kind of dog would Sarah Connor be?
Like
a sheep dog?
No, like a Brittany, a Brittany Spaniel.
I don't know what that is.
They're like.
I know a Britney Spears.
Yeah.
Well, don't call her a dog. Yeah, you're terrible.
What? No, she's amazing. You know I love Britney.
Mm. Well, now that we're completely sidetracked on
I will go through
all
and pause cast this
up
movie
reboot
after we record the podcast
of the Terminator.
Barkinator.
Oh boy. Thank you, Daniel.
That's the official off the rails sound effect. Yes,
for halting that segue. But the episode is essentially an homage to the Terminator, Terminators 1, 2, and 25. And it's a refreshing distance from the last episode, which was very relationship heavy. This
yeah.
one is not.
There's a lot of action in this one.
Exactly. It's which mostly action, yeah. which is great. It starts, the episode starts out at my new favorite place in Crystal Cove, which is the Crystal Cove Animal Asylum for the Criminally Insane. They have one of those in Crystal. This town has everything.
Yeah, really does. I'm just, first of all, thrilled that such a thing exists. But then also, of course, it raises many questions. Why is this in Crystal Cove? Why? I mean, sadly, in real life, if an animal commits a crime, they don't usually spend the money to rehabilitate it and give it.
Well, the backstory in my head is it's where all the Hanna-Barbera characters go after their shows are canceled.
Okay. Well, we do see a great Easter egg later in the episode to that effect.
We do see Yogi Bear being taken out.
Hannibal Lecter style.
Hannibal Lecter
like
style.
On the dolly, like in a straitjacket with,
And
it's
that's
great.
That's. We'll post that picture on the
that moment
Facebooks
right there is worth watching this episode, everybody.
But we do have a dog with glowing red eyes that does attack the asylum to a tune, a copyright-free version of the Terminator soundtrack that we just played. And we'll hear the Terminator cue many times in this episode.
Yeah, it does. All of a sudden, you get the Terminator-y music. I think the warden's trying to feed the guards more coffee, and no one wants coffee. And then suddenly they get attacked by a vicious, I guess we don't know if it's a robot dog or a demon dog or what at this point.
Right now it just has glowing red eyes.
Yeah, and we don't get a very good view of it.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, we just see the glowing red eyes and like the, you know, kind of vaguely evil dog looking or angry dog looking outline.
And then the Terminator song. So that gives you a nice clue as to what the dog actually is.
Well, if you're really paying attention.
Which our viewers probably do. Yeah. Now, cut to credits, and all of a sudden we are at the school, which is very refreshing. Crystal Cove High School. The kids are at school.
It's been weeks, but they're back at school.
They're not in class, of course. They're sitting on the front steps of the school. It is Velma and Shaggy and Scooby, who's allowed to go to the school for some reason. And Scooby and Velma are pressuring poor Shaggy to decide on who he's going to choose. Still.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Well, they got, at least it's like more out in the open. It's no longer, is it this passive-aggressive pressure campaign on the sides when they're alone? It's like now Velma and Scooby are very openly not just vying for his affection, but straight up like, pick one, you can't love us both.
And it's wearing out its welcome, and fortunately we're not going to get much more of it. So
yeah.
they're winding that screw under the wall.
I think the point is to show us that this is getting to be a bit much.
And before we get totally sick, a robot spider shows up, a big robot spider, and it damages the bully's cars in the parking lot.
It barely scrapes a car as it's going through the parking lot, and immediately one of the cool jock bullies is yelling about his new paint job. Whereas I would be much more concerned about the waist-high mechanical death spider rampaging through the parking lot.
With glowing red eyes.
Yeah, I mean, granted, it hasn't, like, destroyed anything or attacked anyone yet, but it is scary looking.
It's probably scarier than the dog.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's clanking around. And,
I love that the other bully is upset because it destroyed his Chucky the Chipmunk educational antenna ball. I will need backstory on who Chucky the Chipmunk is. I'm imagining it's on the Google. No, I'm imagining it's like Chuck E. Cheese mixed with Mickey Mouse, I guess. But we find out that the Robo Spider is being controlled by what Chris calls an upside down light bulb, Jason Wyatt.
Given human form. Yeah, yes. He's very roundy with skinny limbs.
Producer Daniel's looking at a picture of Jason, and he is laughing.
And everyone just calls him a nerd immediately, but, like, I don't know, maybe don't make fun of the guy who invents giant robot spiders in his spare time and can drive them around, like, mostly flawlessly. He barely scrapes that car, but, like, he's just got his drone remote control.
He's just doing his drone thing.
He's one laser cannon mounted on that spider thing away from owning this whole town, so maybe cool it, bullies.
Maybe he's the one that helps everyone make their elaborate costumes.
That actually crossed my mind. So when I saw him, the first thing I thought of was Bud of the man crab suit.
Bud Shelton.
Yeah, I thought maybe they were going to be related somehow. This was a younger brother or cousin or something.
Well, we don't know he's not.
I suppose.
I guess everyone in Crystal Cove is really smart.
But they don't specifically link them, though. They don't give them the same last name. They don't talk about that connection at all. So I don't think they're supposed to be... connected. I think this just, again, goes to show how well-funded schools are in Crystal Cove, that they have a robotics club that's so well...
funded?
Yeah, funded and put together that, you know, these kids are actually learning these things and have access to all these tools and motors and bits and pieces.
And Jason, Jason's in love with Velma because she's the only girl that talks to him and touched his hand once, giving him a wrench or something. And so he's trying to impress her with the spider robot.
They're in robot club together.
Yeah, which every woman would love a giant robo spider to attack their enemies, I guess.
That's a better opening line than most of the ones I get.
We'll be right back. Shaggy pretends to be jealous and grabs Velma's arm to get her away from Jason.
He doesn't. Velma's being very non-confident. She's being sweet, but she doesn't know how to end the conversation without hurting his
feelings.
This
is the one time she's not being a bee.
Yeah, really, for some reason. I guess, I mean, she must relate to him in some way. Like, this is the whole setup kind of seems like he's the only kid at school nerdier than she is. Like, he's the only one who's more of a social pariah.
Don't forget about that little girl.
Oh.
The little girl that went to jail.
She's in jail now, though.
Yeah, well, yeah, she was also very smart.
Yeah, but she's in jail.
But she likes civics more than robotics.
Yeah. So... Velma's looks to Daphne for like help me out of this conversation, and Shaggy of all people is the one who steps up and is like, "Excuse me, she is spoken for or something." I forget exactly what he says. Basically,
essentially, yeah. Grabs her and they walk off, and then that gives Velma more false hope.
Oh, she's all excited. She's like, "Oh,
maybe
so
shouldn't
sweet.
Have done that."
And he's like, "No, we were just talking about food, and I was hungry, and I really wanted to get out of there." And Velma's just like, "God."
So close, Films. Yeah. So close. And we have our first alleged suspect with Jason, you know, robotics, glowing red eyes.
Yeah, I think that he certainly motive. Everyone at school hates him.
Well, no one likes a light bulb guy.
I guess not.
Cut to the nighttime, the best time at Crystal Cove. We see our favorite mystery bus, the Crystal Cove Mystery Tour Bus. And that's what Velma's mom drives everyone around town at
driven
night.
Driven by none other than
Mrs. Dinkley.
Mrs. Velma's mom.
Mrs.
Did we get a name for her?
She does have a name.
Okay.
And of course I've forgotten it now. Yeah. Thank you for setting me up.
We can go with Mrs. Dinkley.
Mrs. Dinkley. Mrs. Dinkley mentions, I love this part because you know I love a throwback to Scooby-Doo episodes. Mrs. Dinkley is doing a nighttime tour of the city. And she talks about the Wax Phantom, the Wax Phantom being a classic Scooby-Doo villain. Who
I knew you'd have some more info on this one.
He appeared in the second season of the show, the original show, in the early 70s. He's like the blobby-looking Phantom guy.
Was this episode in like a wax museum or just unrelated?
I believe it was.
Okay.
I believe it was.
Nice.
It was called Don't Fool with the Phantom, which is sound advice.
Yeah.
And we also find out that wax, the wax-scented formaldehyde is actually the official smell of Crystal Cove.
And you can buy formaldehyde-scented candles at the gift shop, the haunted gift shop.
Yeah, I would love to go to that gift shop.
Oh, I would. Well, we see the whole shop later in the episode, and it looks amazing.
It looks super fun.
Yeah.
So as they're going through all that, the Fright Hound shows up and attacks the bus. Opens it like a can opener.
It's very end of the tour, and all the tourists are all excited. Ooh, maybe it's not the end of the tour. And I like Velma's mom.
She's like, I would charge you more.
One-liners. Yeah. She's like, no, the tour is over. If it wasn't, I'd have charged you more, which is great. And then the Fright Hound rips the roof of the bus open.
It's true. Also, just to go back, at the beginning, Jason is reading a newspaper about the monster-based economy of Crystal Cove.
Oh, really? I missed that.
And how Mystery Incorporated is really messing with that.
Ha, that's awesome.
So I enjoyed that.
So the whole town. So that kind of...
Angie Dinkley. Producer Daniel's telling us that Angie Dinkley is the mom's name.
Thank you, Daniel.
That's what you're here for.
So the Fright Hound jumps, claws his way inside the bus. Angie faints.
She does.
On the door and slumps over on the door controls, trapping everyone inside the bus.
Way to go.
And you get a nice exterior shot of the bus rocking around as if there's some sort of
like
massacre.
Everyone's being murdered.
Yeah. You think it's
this is a pretty violent episode.
It reminded me of a shot. I'm not going to be able to remember what movie, but it
reminded me of the Buffy the Vampire Slayer episode, Never Kill a Boy on the First Date.
Okay, yeah.
Where the vampires break into a bus, mm-hmm. a tour bus, and they kill everybody. Yeah. And you just see it rocking back and forth.
Okay, that's probably what I was thinking then. But then the Fright Hound just jumps out the window.
Daniel, you haven't seen Buffy? No?
Not a Buffy fan?
Oh, jeez. Just when you were cool. Just when I thought you were cool, man. Uh-oh. No amount of key pushing
but everyone's will save you. Everyone's okay. The Fright Hound doesn't actually
kill anybody.
Velma's
mom is injured. She has a head trauma of some sort. And Velma is, of course, super super concerned.
The gang show up.
Because they just know these things. The Mystery Machine just goes to where bad things happen.
And so the gang shows up right after the ruckus has calmed down and the police.
The ruckus.
The ambulance is there.
I like that word, ruckus.
Ruckus, yeah. The Fright Hound's
Scooby-Doo ever said ruckus?
What?
Anyway, yeah. Has Scooby ever said that word? Because I think it would be
ruckus.
There we go. Thanks. Anyway, the sheriff is there, Sheriff Stone, and he immediately pins the crime on Scooby-Doo because...
Oh, yeah, right away. He just turns around. Your dog buddy's going to jail.
The whole podcast is worth it for you to do that impression. And the people on the bus pin it on him, too. You know, saying it was Scooby because he looks a lot like the Hound, except for no glowing red eyes. And they find a collar. They find a bit of a collar, a dog collar.
Oh, yeah, the Fright Hound's collar snapped off when he jumped into the bus. They did
show
that.
I'm happy that the Fright Hound has a collar. That's a nice touch.
Yeah.
You know, most people wouldn't think of putting a
collar
on a Fright Hound.
If found, please return Fright Hound to...
they could have solved the mystery if they just read the tag.
They didn't read the tag. And the whole gang immediately was like, wait, what? No, Scooby was with us the whole time. And Sheriff Stone's report to that. But they have all this evidence of how Scooby couldn't have done it, like, immediately.
But this
is
Crystal Cove.
Sheriff Stone's like, well, we found his collar. And he's like, but he's wearing his collar. It's still on him right there.
He probably has a closet full of...
criminal mastermind dog would have a closet full of collars. Because that makes sense. Yeah,
it's true. They would. I mean...
I suppose.
Yeah. Anyway, but we already know that Mr. Ink is causing problems in the town, so getting Scooby out of the equation is a nice...
He gets, like, full-on
diversion.
Shoved up on the hood of the car, handcuffed, and thrown in the back of the police car, and he gives a very mournful cry for Shaggy out the back window as he's being driven away.
And now it's Shaggy's turn to have a mental breakdown.
Shaggy loses it.
He's the last person of Mr. Inc. we haven't seen really fall apart. So now it's his turn. Welcome to the club, Shag.
Yeah, that's true.
So he is, they want to get Scooby back, of course, but they have to solve the mystery. That way they can clear Scooby's name. Seems logical. And Velma's taking this time to move in on Scooby's territory, literally trying to take the place of Scooby-Doo. She's like, maybe you want to move on now, huh? Maybe we don't. Yeah,
yeah. It's like, yeah, we got to save Scooby. But in the meantime, maybe try moving on. And even Daphne's like, Velma, like, not the time. She's like, what?
She's
saying.
Daphne says, dial it back a smidge, Velma.
Yeah.
Velma goes as far as to talk like Scooby-Doo when they go to get food. She says, Roma-doma-doo.
And scarfs down Shaggy's food off his
plate. Eats a whole plate of food.
Yeah.
Like,
and that's when Daphne's
totally
like,
embarrassing herself.
Dial it back, Velma. Although it could be read as her doing her best to comfort her distraught friend. We know her motives aren't necessarily completely pure in this moment, but that's... that's totally the kind of goofy joke that I would
Christopher,
make.
I love that you dig deep. That's why, you know, your impressions and your foresight into their inner monologues is what I enjoy.
Like, okay, imagine if your dog Max were sick and you had to take him to the vet and then we were hanging out later and to try to comfort you, I might like do a Max thing. Like pretend like, you know, I feel like that's the
producer
kind
Daniel
of dumb joke
is
going to
stop
make.
This podcast right now.
Maybe that was not the best example, considering.
But I appreciate that, and you would. All right.
So I read that as less like desperate, and as a little more like just she's being nice.
Okay. All right.
It could be okay. Whatever. Fine.
Agreed, disagree, but I get your point. I get your point, and I don't want my dog to go to the hospital, so let's not put that out in the universe.
No, Max is fine.
The gang follow Scooby to the asylum for once again, the Crystal Cove Animal Asylum for the Criminally Insane. It's their Arkham, basically. Their Arkham Asylum for animals. And the gang is warned. By the they have to go through all these hoops.
Thoroughly warned. Yeah,
it's like going through the worst airport in the world.
They go through a full body scanner. They have to put like protective clothing on, I think.
And the security guard sounds a lot like Nathan Fillion. It is not. I looked.
It does
not
sound a lot like him.
But I think that's who they were trying to go for, a Nathan Fillion vibe with this security guard.
They should have asked Nathan Fillion.
Oh, he's so hot right now.
Oh, he's so handsome.
He is handsome.
He would have done this.
He probably would have.
He loves
I imagine.
I have no basis for saying.
I told
this,
you I saw
sure
him the other day
Scooby-Doo.
With his tight white T-shirt on. Oh, that man! He could solve my mystery any day.
Jinkies.
Yeah, yeah, jinkies. Anyway, back to Scooby-Doo. We see how rough this asylum really is.
It's scary. It's scary in there. Then
we hear about Snappy Jack the turtle.
Snappy Jack, the guard has a little nick on his finger. He's like, "Would a non-criminally insane animal do this?" And everyone's
he kind of would.
That seems like something a snapping turtle would do.
They're told not to make eye contact with any of the insane animals.
It's a scary monkey tries to get Daphne.
Yes. I honestly wish it would all have been Hanna-Barbera characters. If they're going to go that far, you know, have Jabberjaw in there and just all...
What was the
Wonder
Twins?
The Hair Bear Bunch.
Monkey?
Gleek.
Gleek, yeah,
it could
have
been Gleek.
Yeah, I agree.
And as he's telling them not to make eye contact with any of the animals, we see this long, evil-looking giraffe.
It's the scariest-looking
giraffe
I've ever
seen. Long-necked
giraffe.
You know, like when you go to the evil universe, opposite universes, everything's kind of gray and they all have dark circles under their eyes.
Kind of grizzled. Like, all that this giraffe is missing is an evil goatee.
I'm showing producer Daniel.
We're showing Daniel
and he's trying to sneak up on the guard to get his keys, and the guard turns around with a taser.
Yeah, don't make me use this, Mr. Bendy.
Mr. Bendy is the name of the giraffe. I hope this is not the last we see of Mr. Bendy because
I really
hope not.
He's my
favorite
character.
He got a name, man. He got a name.
He's scary. I'm looking at him right now. That's an evil giraffe.
all giraffes are inherently evil.
Are they?
I don't know. Long necks, really? Just long necks for spots.
I believe it.
Those little antenna ears. Creepy. Scooby's in a... The views of Brad. So those are the Mystery Machine Diaries.
I didn't know you had such strong feelings on giraffes.
Well, now you know. Scooby's in a cell, and he's already... he's been there maybe an hour. He's already broken down, and he's freaking out, man. Mostly because of the food.
He's not doing well in prison.
And no. Shaggy says he's going to rip the bars off the doors. He's really still...
He has his own kind of moment. He's still kind of freaking out.
And as they're doing that...
I have to break this whole joint open.
As we're doing that, all of a sudden, we hear a familiar tune come from Daphne's locket.
Yeah, this is kind of...
There we go. Thank you. Good job.
She, like, accidentally or just kind of distractedly opens the locket as they're talking.
As if on cue, it opens up.
Yeah, and we hear the tune, and then we hear a voice from off camera.
We do. We hear, after Shaggy's losing it, Daphne's locket opens to play the Mystery Inc. music, and all of a sudden we hear a voice talking, and the guard freaks out.
Was it Mystery Incorporated back at it again?
Mystery Incorporated back at it again.
Something like that. Yeah.
And
in a vaguely ominous Eastern European accent. Yeah.
The guard freaks out and takes, for some reason, escorts Mystery Incorporated to the voice for no reason.
Oh, I like that. Yeah, the guard is shy. He's like, he talked, and he goes and opens this like. Crazy high security.
It's like Magneto.
I was gonna say yes. It reminds me of Magneto's prison in X2.
It's a huge cavernous cell with a little bridge that goes to a bird cage,
a giant glass bird cage,
and the bird is in a straitjacket. It's Professor Pericles, who we've only seen thus far in pictures. And yes. He looks pretty nice in the pictures.
Yeah, he just looked.
But
like
he looks like he's gone through some shit now.
Oh man, he's like one of his eyes is all like milked over, and there's a big scar.
Scar
down his
over
face.
His eye, and his voice
all sharp and scary.
He is voiced by classic horror actor German filmmaker Udo Kier,
which is just perfect.
He's been in so many things throughout the 60s, 70s, 80s.
Like what, Brad?
Like Dracula. He played Dracula in Andy Warhol's version of Dracula. Ooh. He's always the assassin. And he was in a Madonna video once, so you know he's bad news.
Oh, yeah.
But he just has that look. He has that German look and that great voice. Unmistakable voice of Udo Kier.
Even if you don't know who Udo Kier is, you will recognize Professor Pericles' voice.
When we talked to Victor Cook, we talked about the huge get snagging him as a voice actor and said he loved working with him. And I can imagine I'd be freaked out the whole time. Chris
I'm looking at a picture
of him.
Pericles versus Udo Kier. I was just curious how much of the character design was based on him. I could see a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, he's every German. He's every Nazi. He's
every evil German.
He's
every
woman, basically. I'm sure he's a real nice guy in real life. I mean, he's in a Scooby-Doo cartoon, so how mean can he really be? Anyway.
After Velma tries to mansplain.
Yeah, Velma's trying to mansplain that parrots can talk. It's pretty common.
Yeah, because the guard's like, I can't believe he talked. And
first
Velma's,
time in years.
Well, actually, parrots are blah, 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 very commonly with the verbal such as
Velma
ruins
brain. Everything.
Yeah, and the guard shuts it down and is like, okay, sis, enough chat there. He hasn't talked in many years. We all know he can talk. I'm an animal criminal guard, not an idiot. Thank you. Velma.
Even though he is an idiot because Professor Pericles is torturing him and... He can do things from the cage, like make his keys disappear and stuff, and does a lot of mind games. Very Hannibal Lecter style.
Yeah. He's definitely messing with the guard mentally.
And he talks to Mystery Inc. directly and says, clues await you, children. Not creepy at all. And he gives him a big clue. He says, beware those closest to you, Frederick.
Yes, right at
right
Fred.
Right at Fred, and Fred has no idea what that even means.
And Fred kind of freaks out a little bit. He's like,
oh, as I would
what?
If a parrot with Udo Kier's voice told me that, watch out. And they're still mulling over what the hell that means when they go back to the crime scene to try to find clues for what happened.
Oh, we forgot to mention somehow Professor Pericles duct tapes the guard's taser to his own hand.
He does duct tape the taser to his hand.
Because the guard's trying to get the kids out of there, like, don't talk to Professor Pericles, we're done here. And Professor Pericles is like, what you failed to notice is that you've duct taped your taser to your own hand. He's like, wait, what? And tases himself in the face.
He's a very annoying German uncle.
And
who
then,
knows
and
magic?
Then, yeah, and then that gives him the opening to have this very ominous little chat with Mystery Inc. Before
Once
the guy
again,
regains
very,
consciousness and ushers them out. But that's never addressed.
Very
I mean,
Silence of the
that.
Lambs. Very Silence yeah. of the Lambs. Which is great because it's a parrot. But they do go back to the crime scene and they find a robotic leg servo.
Right,
like
yeah.
You do when you
Velma finds
go to bus crashes.
A robot part and knows exactly what it is immediately.
Which is, we've already established he was in the robotics club.
Yeah,
so,
well,
so
and then
she would know.
That, and that's where she goes with this part eventually, is this is the exact same kind of servo that we have at Robot Club.
Once again, a well-funded Robot Club. That's
yeah,
a pretty high-tech. It's like Terminator 2 when they have the hand, when they have the Terminator's hand in the glass case.
Oh, yeah.
And that's how they make, you know, Cyberdyne and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. Skynet. So that's what it reminded me of. It doesn't take a genius to figure out that trails lead to Jason, whom we saw before. It's a good thing that every mystery revolves around people we just meet for the first time in each episode, so we're not confused.
It's very convenient.
By the myriad of people in the town. But they do decide to go to Jason's house to see if he knows anything, and they're greeted by Jason's mother, who I don't think Chris noticed this right away, who looks just like one of my favorite characters of all of television, looked like Endora from Bewitched. Oh, love it.
So my knowledge of Bewitched is there's a lady, she's a witch, she wiggles her nose, and her military boyfriend has to clean up the mess.
You're mixing I Dream of Jeannie with Bewitched.
That's what I thought.
That
okay,
was Major
bad.
Nelson.
Sorry.
You're thinking of Darren.
What's Darren do?
He works in advertising.
Oh.
With Larry Tate.
Sure.
Endora is Samantha's mother, who is a witch.
Oh, okay.
And
well, any
every friend
have
to every drag queen that's ever been.
Yes, sure. Anytime we see a character in this show who stands out a bit, I assume that it's a reference to something that you will tell me about later. But unless it's like a direct Hanna-Barbera thing, I'm
all the way down
movies.
To the right eyeshadow.
Oh,
it's
wow.
Very, very nicely done. And she's voiced by
I forget the actress's name.
Jessica Walters.
Jessica Walters, thank you.
The incredible Jessica Walters.
Yeah, I love her.
Everything I do is so dramatic and flamboyant. It just makes me want to set myself on fire.
And that exactly. is the theme of the Mystery Machine Diaries. Yes, Jessica Walter, of course, from Arrested Development. Archer's
yeah.
mom. So you know her voice right away. And another amazing cameo voice.
I got to say, it actually took me...
Out of it?
No. It took me a couple of lines to figure out who it was. Because she's so sweet as Jason's mom at first. This must be Velma. Thank you for coming over to see my Jason. It's so wonderful to see you. I'm used to her playing such mean, snarky characters that I associate her with that line of her.
So far,
fire,
yeah, she's sweet as pie, and she wants to make them snacks because, of course, she knows who Velma is already, because apparently Jason talks about her all the time. Then we see the gang go to Jason's bedroom, which is creepy
little,
as hell.
Like Velma shrine.
It
going
is
on in there.
Velma pictures everywhere, even her broken pair of her glasses that she always loses under a glass case. So he is president of the Velma Dinkley fan club, at least. And if I was
like
Velma, I'd be
than
pretty
fan club.
Impressed.
But
she does lose her glasses
creepy.
A lot, though. She probably does need a lot of new glasses. They essentially go in there and blame him. They don't even really ask him any questions. They're just kind of like, yep, you did it. And Jason is talking to some internet buddies from around the world on his webcam.
Oh, yeah.
They're nerds from every country.
He's like, check it out. I got a girl in my room. They're all like, oh, damn.
And they say he has an alibi because he was talking to them.
So he makes a really good point.
First
of all, he's like, okay, I'm crushed because I thought we were friends. But secondly, you come in here, you don't even ask me any questions. You don't let me establish an alibi.
You know, evidence is circumstantial at best.
Yeah, yeah. And it's like, oh,
burn.
He got you there, Velma.
He
really
got them
does.
All.
Yeah.
Because really, they do jump the gun quite often.
Quite a bit. And this
and
this
he
really marks
cry.
The end
sad.
Of his love for Velma. It would seem he's mad. He kicks them right out on their butts.
Because Velma says that he did it to break up Mystery Incorporated so he could have her all to herself. Are you, you know, absorbed much, Velma? Even though seeing that room, kind of true.
I don't, well, maybe she should go for someone who has an actual interest in her and appreciates her intelligence and
he likes Velma
and,
for
like,
Velma.
Nerdy stuff. Yeah, and they clearly have common interests.
Hmm.
Like, this seems like a better pairing than Shaggy.
It does.
But I don't know. He's not cute enough, maybe? I don't know. We don't get into it, but
Velma's kind of scary looking.
To him.
Upside down light bulb.
Okay. Who,
with braces.
But at that age, who wasn't?
Yeah.
You know?
I'm sure I have a few upside down light bulb pictures somewhere.
I definitely have a few upside down light bulb.
You couldn't possibly.
Pictures. No, I was just tiny, but I had the braces and I was all gangly and strangely proportioned. Mm. Big head, little hands. Mm.
Your tuck. So they're kicked out of the house, and Jason's mom is like, "Where are you going?" Not knowing that they just broke her son's heart. And the Fright Hound attacks the Mystery Machine as they're driving away. Jumps on the roof like a Terminator to the songs of the Terminator. Dun, 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 dun. Rips
boom,
it open,
boom, boom, boom.
Which is great. Sheriff Stone still won't believe them. And he thinks that Scooby has a closet of robo dogs at home because they figure out it's a robotic dog.
Oh, yeah. There's a pretty... So they go to Sheriff Stone and say, it's a robot. Here's all of our proof. And I love how his reaction is immediately like... Well, who's controlling the? Well, who's controlling this robot dog? It stands to reason that the criminal mastermind Scooby-Doo would be making robot dogs to carry out his nefarious plans and such around town. Something like that. It's pretty good.
I'm just gonna listen to him talk, guys. Just
I'm gonna have to put some serious effort into my Sheriff Stone impression.
That's
I
good,
think
though.
I'm pretty close.
No,
I think
no,
I'm pretty
good.
Close.
Okay, no, any more and it's too much. It's charming right now.
Okay.
The listeners love it.
That's good. Good, good.
I'm speaking for the listeners.
Wait till they hear my Arnold Schwarzenegger later on
oh,
for the
no.
Terminator there. Yeah.
Oh. Wow. Oh. We'll be right back. Then the sheriff gets a call that the asylum is under attack by the Fright Hound.
By a Fright Hound. I like how unprompted the guards have named it the Fright Hound. They're
it's a Terminator Fright Hound.
We've been attacked by a Fright Hound.
And they're shooting at the Fright Hound, and some of its face is coming off. And we see its metal exterior and glowing red eye.
So I thought this scene was interesting for a couple of reasons. First of all, it's...
For a couple of reasons, because it's a damn dog.
Well,
it's a robot.
Well, so we finally see the Fright Hound in all of his glory, and he looks like a badass Scooby-Doo.
Yeah.
He looks like a mean... like monsterified Scooby, but about the same size, colors, markings.
The way a poor 90s reboot would have gone if it was a Marvel comic.
Like if Scooby-Doo ended up in Batman Beyond universe, this is how Scooby-Doo would look. He looks like there's a Venture Brothers episode with a dog.
There is.
Like
a
very,
Fright Hound,
very much.
Yes.
Oh, is it? Okay,
I think
We get like an almost it's kind of like a mashup homage of a couple of different scenes from Terminator where the dog's walking through. He goes through explosions and
the fire.
All,
he walks through the.
I thought it was worth noting. I think this is the first time we've seen guns used in the show.
Probably
and
yes.
All the security guards are like locked and loaded and strapped and using like real guns to shoot at this dog. And he takes some damage and part of his face comes off and it's Like just like the Terminator, you can see his eye and like that quarter of his face exposed. And then he walks through some flames and all and the like all body melts off. And it's just robotic. Robot dog. Yeah, it's really cool.
And he goes and breaks into Scooby's cage and he's looks like he's going to kill Scooby. And then Shaggy comes in, does his best Linda Hamilton and rescues Scooby-Doo at the last second.
Barely makes it. Yeah.
And they rescue Scooby. They try to escape and the van. This is what. One of my favorite parts of the whole show, the van breaks down, and they go, did the engine get stolen again, like it did for the alligator yeah. episode? And it goes, oh, it's just out of gas.
Well, and they managed to, so they're running away from the dog. They go through a tunnel, and they manage to do a like full drive up the wall around the tunnel.
Once again, the mystery machine is pretty darn
it's pretty magical,
mobile.
Apparently, yeah, and escape the Fright Hound temporarily. And then they break down
break down in front of an abandoned steel factory. And
what does Fred say?
Fred,
let's hide in the abandoned, like, sharp object factory.
Fred has a genius idea of running into the abandoned steel factory where they'll be safe amongst the dangerous machinery.
Yeah, that's how I put it. We'll be safe amongst the abandoned dangerous machinery.
It's like that Geico commercial with the killer after them and they hide by the chainsaws. It has to be like a takeoff on that. So they go to a steel factory. Thank goodness.
And it is the steel factory from the end of Terminator
2.
It absolutely is. It's perfect.
Velma and this is where a lot of action happens, which is great. Velma and Shaggy are
really
cornered.
Good chase sequence here, yeah.
And Velma takes his time as they're cornered about to die to ask Shaggy to make a decision.
Yeah, she's like, so, like, we might die, so, like, mind settling this once and for all? And
all of a sudden, the Fright Hound is knocked over by mechanical arms.
Oh, yeah. They're about to die. Like the Fright Hound is about to get them. And suddenly the Fright Hound is like flipped upside down by a front loader. And we get a really good aliens moment right here, actually, is what happens.
We're stalling.
Get away from her, you bitch!
Yeah!
That's exactly, yeah. And so that happens, like, shot for shot. And I forget what the line that Scooby says, but he delivers it just
he
like
says,
that.
He says, he obviously doesn't say, get away from her, you bitch. He says, bad dog, time to heal.
That's
which
right.
Is super cute. And so Scooby-Doo's driving a forklift, looking like Sigourney Weaver. And he's fighting with the dog. They're fighting in his machine versus the robo dog until the forklift is knocked over and Shaggy grabs the robo dog with a crane that has a net with it because Fred's
it's like
there.
It's like a giant robo hand kind of thing that Fred's controlling.
Fred's like Spider-Man. Instead of webs, he creates nets.
Wherever
he is, there's a net. Who's a net? The Fright Hound escapes, of course. But he's on a conveyor belt, like all those old Looney Tunes cartoons where, you know, it's like one smushes, one dices.
One's flames.
And he goes through this.
He goes through this gauntlet.
Dog, robo-dog torture. And, of course, they think.
And he ends up getting smashed at the end by a hydraulic press, just like in Terminator.
So you think he's done for.
You see the red fade out of his eyes, just like in Terminator.
But of course, now Fred is making puns throughout this. He's decided this is a good time to make dog puns. And
to be fair, they're all hilarious, and it's never a bad time for a good dog pun.
I'm sorry. You're correct. What was I thinking? the Fright Hound, of course, one last jump at the gang.
Do you have any of the puns ready to go? I forget what
I didn't write them down.
Something with fleas.
This is those awkward moments that you told me not to create. Before we started.
Well, this one's on me. And
thanks.
Zoinks!
Thanks, Daniel.
We get the last gasp of the Fright Hound. And just before it's about to get the gang, because they're not really paying attention, Scooby Dooby Doo runs him over again with
the forklift.
The forklift. It says, play dead.
Play dead.
We get a moment. There's a side view of Scooby in the forklift, kind of looking out of his corner of his eye at the audience or down at the like crushed Fright Hound, and he's looking the most badass I've ever seen Scooby do.
Well, You
like,
know,
I kind of want to screenshot that frame of him in the forklift and get that as a tattoo. Like, I just really liked the way it was framed and the way he looked in that shot. It looks great.
Well, we'll see. We'll see what we can do.
We might.
We have a lot of technology at our hands, don't we, Daniel? It's a laptop, really. It's a laptop. It looks like it's a 2014 laptop, Daniel. He doesn't
know. He's nodding his head, ish.
It fell off a truck.
Sure.
So now that the robo dog is smushed, we see a mysterious person in a cloak who is trying to escape before Fred uses the claw again to grab the person and knock him over.
That's my first thought at that. Dead.
Yeah.
All your ribs crushed immediately.
Like this giant metal claw
grabbed
just
and
knocks
then thrown
this person
to the ground
over. Yeah.
From an overhead gantry, like catwalk.
Gantry.
Thing. Gantry lift catwalk thing.
God, I love your words. That's just love your words.
You know. But yeah, if the robot claw didn't crush all your ribs, the 20-foot fall would. So.
And all they did was drop the remote, basically, when they fell.
Yeah.
And Sheriff Stone comes in. They all have their guns. And he said he heard the sound of an undying machine.
Yes. We heard the sounds of a terrifying, undying monstrosity of a machine in here. I thought we should check it out. Kind of something like that.
You embellish, but that was probably better than what he actually said.
It was close.
And we get the unmasking or the uncloaking, and it's
what
Jason's
a twist!
Mom.
It's Jason's mom, you guys.
Just like Friday the 13th, it's Jason's mom.
Not expecting that. So, and that pulls it around to Jason being a Jason reference.
Yeah.
So I was wondering if that, like I said, anytime a character looks distinctive, I assume it's a reference to something. And we didn't have anything specific for Jason. He doesn't look like any other character that we recognize.
That's true.
And there was no other reference that we could come up with for Jason other than Jason
this
Voorhees.
Friday the 13th. And the mom doesn't get a name. It's just Jason's mom.
So there you go. Just like she's in this one, I don't think we got. Yeah.
She's great. She says she gave up a career in the military robotics to raise her son.
Yeah, she launches into this whole monologue. And basically,
she was doing what Velma thought that Jason was doing, trying to break up Mystery Incorporated so Velma would go out with Jason.
Well, wasn't it initially? Was that the initial thing?
Yeah.
Was it to get Velma?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay. And then when Velma and the kids broke his heart, she was like,
"Yeah, now they're gonna
die. I was just gonna murder you all. Yeah, I was gonna send a killer robot.
She
out
seems
to kill
great.
You.
She's a great mom.
Well, I mean, she gives this great dialogue in that amazing voice of hers. It's really
It's very Jessica Walters-y.
It's very Jessica Walters-y. She's super angry. You know, the righteous indignation is strong with her. It's great. It's fun.
And Jason is there all of a sudden. He's there very quickly, and he yells at his mom, saying Velma would have been his girlfriend if it wasn't for his meddling mother.
Which, that was fun.
And, but then Velma makes it clear to Jason they will only ever be friends.
Well, okay. She's direct about it. She's even says,
she was
she's
nice.
Like, I wasn't clear earlier. And she like takes his hands and is like, listen, Jason, it's never going to happen. And he's crushed. And then she says, but we can still be friends. And he's like, okay. And she even comments,
she touched
like,
my
wow,
hand.
You took that really well. And he's like, yeah. And then she walks away and he's like, I'm never washing this hand again. She touched my knuckle again. It's like, well,
this
baby
may
steps.
Not be the last time baby we see steps. Jason, by the way.
Well, this leads us to perhaps Jason's big opening.
Wow. Yes, because Shaggy sees this and he is moved to declare that he is not ready for a girlfriend.
Yeah, he's like, you know, you're right. Sometimes it's better to be clear.
You just got
to
be clear.
And I just don't think I'm ready for a girlfriend. But we can still be friends.
Oh, no.
And Velma freaks out.
Ruh-roh.
She has a good point that her boyfriend has chosen a dog over her.
To be fair, I would choose Scooby-Doo over any woman.
He's a talking dog. Absolutely. I also think that's a losing proposition anytime you ask a significant other or potential partner
to choose
between their pet and you. Like,
that would be like if you told me to choose between you and Max.
Yeah, obviously Max would win. Mm. I would never ask that because clearly you'd pick Max.
Clearly.
Yeah, and you should.
Velma gives the reaction that Shaggy worried since episode one that she would give.
Yep.
Which is, like you said, understandable. For the first time, all right, I get it. You should act that way. But before she can freak out anymore, she gets a text on her phone.
Well, and Fred's like, "Oh, well, I'm glad that's all settled now," or something like he.
Yeah, she said exactly something like, "This is the worst I've ever felt," or "This is the worst pain ever," or something. And he's like, "Great, so now that you've done that, you know."
Yeah, he's really callous about the whole thing. It's a real like jerk move on Fred's part, which kind of rolls into later on. We see him being a jerk,
but he's like you said, that's his way of trying to.
Okay. It's as much of a jerk as Fred Jones can be. He's not being malicious. He's not trying to be an ass. He's a total cad. He sticks his foot in his mouth and looks like a jerk.
Like when he says in the gnome episode, "I don't even know what that means."
Yeah.
He's not bright, but in his head, he's like, "Great, we can move on now. This is fine. This is all behind us." Mm-hmm. So... But yeah, that didn't come off very well. Like most guys, most teenage boys saying anything doesn't come
that's
off
true.
Very well. I often forget they're only supposed to be 16 or 17.
Yeah.
But Fred is
giant
boy. And he is very emotionally stunted. So he sticks his whole leg in his mouth. And then Velma gets a text on her phone from Mr. E. Thank goodness. Good timing once again.
Yeah, really.
We find out that Professor Pericles has escaped. And Mr. E's advice.
That's right. So when the Fright Hound.
The Fright Hound has
Scooby
a breakout.
In the asylum.
There was a breakout at the Arkham.
I forget. They showed someone like opening all the cages. I think one of the animals.
The cages were all opened, yes.
The cages are all opened in the scuffle.
Kerfuffle.
And all the... animals have been recaptured, except Professor Pericles.
Even the demented Yogi Bear has been recaptured.
And this is where we see the demented Yogi Bear, which is great.
And Mr. E tells
them... He's got the little hat and the bolo tie.
He had a little pork pie hat.
Yeah.
And Mr. E tells them to follow the parrot. Sound advice for any teenagers. Follow the parrot. Especially
follow
if you're in
the
Pasadena. There's tons of them.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I've seen them.
So, that in a nutshell is the episode itself. We got lots of Easter eggs. I loved all the callbacks, like the callback of the wax phantom and Daphne's callback to the missing engine from the Alligator Town, Gaithersburg.
Yes, yeah, those are all great. I really like the Terminator and Alien and Friday the 13th references, since those are three of my favorite franchises.
Yes.
So that's really fun.
Also, Jason. Jason's name is Jason Wyatt, and that is the name of the production manager of the series.
Oh.
So he's named after someone who worked on the show.
That's nice.
I would love to be named after a character. Scooby-Doo have a character named after me.
If I were a producer on a show, I would do my absolute damnedest to get characters named after myself all the time.
So if you're listening... Hanna-Barbera, Warner Brothers. We would enjoy that.
If you ever want to name a monster of the week after Brad or myself, we'd be incredibly flattered.
I'd be very flattered. Also of note, in other countries, episodes are called different things.
Sure, they speak other languages there.
They do. So, thank you, Christopher, for that lesson. This episode in España is called The Demonic Hound. It is also called Howl of the Hound Monster.
El Pedo Demonico? Howl of the Hound Monster?
Like Howl of the Hound Monster.
That's good, too.
In Italy, it's called Scooby Botic, which I love.
Oh, I like that, too.
I love that.
That's great.
And in France, the weird French, it's called Who Wants the Skin of Scooby-Doo?
Wow.
Who Wants the Skin of Scooby-Doo? Oh, God. In Portuguese, it's called The Howl of the Sinister Hound.
That's pretty
good.
That's
kind of cool.
It's not bad.
In Hungary, it's called The Alter Ego, which is also pretty deep and cool. And in Greek, it's called The Howl of the Robot Dog, which kind of gives it away.
That's like two on the nose.
But maybe we'll start giving you all the different varied names of the episodes.
We haven't done those before. That's fun. I like that.
This one just tickled me. The Who Wants the Skin of Scooby? I like Scooby.
German it was Robohund.
Robohund.
Yeah.
Let's ask Udo Kier. He would know.
He would know.
And as all you listeners know, we do rate the episodes on a paw scale of up to 4 paws, 4 being the best, and 1 paw being still better than any other cartoon on television. What say you, Christopher?
I'm going to give this one a solid 3 paws. I was tempted to go 3 paws and a tail. It's just good references all around, a lot
Producer
of action.
Daniel did add the tail with the Humongonaut episode.
Yeah. The references are great. We get a lot of the overarching narrative in this one. We don't even know necessarily that he's the bad guy yet, but we've met our bad guy.
It's true.
We get our first hints of the team kind of not being such a great
cracking
team.
Yeah. Yes.
The cracks are beginning to show. And just the whole robot dog. I liked it. Yeah. It's a great episode. One of my favorites so far.
I will also give it 3 paws because it was solid from beginning to end. It had so many references that I loved. If you put a Bewitched reference in anything, it's automatically an amazing episode. But once again, we love when they dig deeper and we can really take apart an episode more than just what's on the surface. And this one had a lot. There's probably even more that I haven't figured out yet. And yes, the overreaching arc of the series, Professor Pericles shows up. And I love Animal Arkham Asylum.
Yeah,
that's
Animal
such
Arkham
a great concept.
So great.
And it's about Scooby-Doo. We rarely get a focus of Scooby. And this is all about him.
This one's very Scooby-centric, yes.
Also, I love it when the theme is crystal clear, and it was the Terminator and Aliens. So bravo to the team. I'm sure they were just sitting on that episode. We need a robot dog episode. We need to do
this. I like how much they committed to the Terminator thing, too, because it's really the whole episode. It's not like, oh, they referenced it, and then, oh, another reference. It's like,
It's
the through line for the whole episode. It's great.
And this is not the last time in the series we'll see a robot dog.
Oh, good.
Thankfully. And solid episode. Loved it. 3 paws. If you disagree with us or agree with us or things we might have missed, please let us know.
I feel like we must have. I felt like there's so much to talk about in this episode.
There's a lot.
We must have missed some stuff.
You can always get us on the Instagrams and the Facebooks. You can DM us and say, oh, I love that too, or oh, I wish they had done this or that. And where can they listen to us once again, even though they're already listening to us?
They're already listening to us, but if you want to recommend us to a friend, tell them
please
to check us out on Spotify or Anchor.fm or Apple Podcasts. Or please, you can talk to us directly on the Facebook at Mystery Machine Diaries or on the Instagram at Mystery Machine Diaries.
We also mentioned earlier that our next episode will be a departure in format as we are going to try a more visual concept.
Stay tuned for that. And we will be spinning off some of the segments from earlier episodes into that format. So
good call.
I'm going to be moving the Scooby cocktails, the Scooby-Doo drinks that we did before. It was taking up a little bit too much time on this podcast. So I'm going to try doing that on live stream or YouTube, however we go with that. So you can actually like see how the drinks are put together.
You can play along at home.
Yeah.
And we'll
do some
game.
We'll do some live streaming. We'll do more Scurby Derps.
Yes. We've only scratched the surface of Scurby Derps.
Maybe some Scooby contests. And
yes.
If you got requests, things you want to see us do.
Uh-oh. Rut-row.
Well, you know, we don't have to take their recommendations, but it'd be nice if they gave us some.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you. We're going to hop back into the Mystery Machine, lock the door, go to sleep. It's late. Chris sat through traffic, so he's exhausted. On behalf of a pup named Chris, I am, of course, Brad, your ghost host, and Daniel will be waving to you from behind the keyboards, and we will see you next week. Actually, see us. You'll see us.
Yeah, see you next week, everybody. Thanks for coming.
Until then, unpleasant dreams.